It's season 2, episode 14 of the Doctors and Litigation, the L Word podcast. I'm Gita Pensa. Welcome back, everybody. As much as it is the truth that doctors and other clinicians get sued and don't like it, it turns out that other participants in this medical legal landscape also get sued and probably don't like it either, including attorneys who can be sued for legal malpractice and insurance companies, which can be sued for something called bad faith. So today we are going to take a little look into the world of bad faith lawsuits. And if you are like me when I started working on this podcast, you will have no idea what that actually means. But I've gotten quite a few questions from listeners about it, and so I thought it was probably time for me to learn something about it and bring that to you. In previous podcasts, when we talked about your medical malpractice insurance policy, and by the way, I recommend that you listen to this podcast in order from season 1, and if you haven't done that, at least listen to the episode about malpractice insurance policies. But in that episode, I mentioned that your insurance policy is basically a contract. You have certain responsibilities, and the insurance company has responsibilities to you. Now, if the company does not uphold its responsibilities, you could have the grounds for a bad faith lawsuit, meaning you would go from the defendant in one case, in a malpractice case, to being the plaintiff in another. Now, just like in medicine, simply not getting the outcome you wanted in a malpractice case is in and of itself not grounds for a bad faith lawsuit. But if that happened because the company was not upholding its end of the bargain, well, then the wheels might start turning. I have had physicians contact me with stories about losing a trial and then having the plaintiff's attorney approach them right after to plant the seeds about starting a bad faith lawsuit, asking the doctor if they wanted to hire them. Right? This lawyer, this plaintiff's attorney just made you feel like a terrible human being and you just lost and you're feeling so much complex stress and these crazy emotions. And now that same person comes over to you to see if you want to work with them. Well, stranger things have happened. And I've said in the past that the legal world feels like a whole other planet. So obviously, you're not going to take this lightly. But what is bad faith? What constitutes bad faith? Well, when a malpractice insurance company acts in bad faith, it means the insurer is not fulfilling its legal or contractual obligations to the policyholder, meaning the doctor or the other healthcare provider. And again, you should know your policy and what your responsibilities are in your policy and what the terms of your coverage are. But in general, insurers have a duty of good faith and fair dealing, meaning they need to handle your claim honestly, fairly, and in accordance with the policy terms. Now, here is something that I have learned since I began working in this arena and working with quite a number of insurance companies. Some are better than others. There, I said it. And today's guest expert is going to speak to that. Now, every insurance company is a business and needs to make good business decisions to be able to continue to stay in business and to insure you year after year. But like all businesses, there are some that abide by a really strong mission and keep the insured doctor or clinician at the heart of their decision making. I know so many wonderful claims professionals and attorneys who literally go to the mat for their doctors, and I mean that. But sadly, there are some companies that, well, sometimes don't. And this goes for the self-insured world of large groups and organizations as well. And even beyond this complexity, sometimes an employer gets in the way of the good faith efforts of the insurance company. And we're going to learn about that today, too, with some information that may be very surprising and unwelcome to you. Is that enough of a spoiler? Keep listening. It will make you want to check what company name is on your W-2. Let's say that if you are an employed physician. So, okay, enough of the spoilers. Let's get to today's interview. So today's guest is an expert in bad faith lawsuits, attorney Dale Swope from Florida. He is a bad faith attorney, meaning that he specializes in these kinds of lawsuits, and he is going to give us his perspective. He has had more than 30 years of service as a board certified civil trial specialist, previously a board certified business litigation specialist, and he has won virtually every legal award nameable in his field. And he holds a reputation as one of the preeminent attorneys practicing in Florida in the area of insurance bad faith. One caveat, though, Mr. Swope practices in Florida, and some of the laws that he talks about are specific to Florida and his own personal experiences, which may not be the same in your state, and it may not be the case for your policy. So always, again, understand your own policy with your own insurance company, and always seek out legal counsel in your own state. So with that, let's get to my interview with Mr. Swope. Hi, Mr. Swope. Thank you so much for coming on this podcast. It is not often or ever so far that I have had a plaintiff's attorney come to talk to us. And so I really do appreciate you and your expertise and your time. Thank you for being here.
I am happy to be here. Feels a little bit like I'm walking into the lion's den, but I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're going to be talking about a topic today that most of the listeners are going to be completely unfamiliar with, and we're not going to be talking about your role in suing doctors or other healthcare providers, which you did do once upon a time, and now that's not your thing right now. Is that correct?
You know, I have tried two medical malpractice cases in my 43-year career. I lost the first one, said I'd never come back, but I did come back and we settled the second one. So okay. I'm not a med mal lawyer, to put it mildly.
Got it. Okay. But you are a bad faith attorney.
Yes.
So today what we're going to talk about is this topic of bad faith, and maybe we'll wander into legal malpractice too. And these are things that doctors and other clinicians don't know anything about. I actually had never heard the term bad faith until I was already creating this podcast, and a doctor reached out to me who had won a bad faith lawsuit and said to me, you need to cover this topic. And I was like, I don't even know what it is. Like, what are we talking about here? And so I think that one of the things that I do in this podcast is educate people about the whole ecosystem of the law as it applies to medicine. And this is part of this ecosystem that we just should familiarize ourselves with. We should know that this exists.
It's monstrously important. The fact of the matter is that when any of us get sued, whether we're sued for a car wreck or malpractice or any other reason, it's a terrifying situation. It's not comfortable. Nobody likes it. The sheriff shows up at your house with papers and kind of generates an insecurity. And insurance companies sell us with the idea that what they're giving us is security. So here is our safe place to go in this moment of insecurity. And we all want to believe that our insurance companies are there to help us, and they are. And let me make something clear here. There's lots of different types of insurance. There's everything from life insurance to property insurance, that if your house burns down, the property insurance will pay for it. What we're talking about today is liability insurance, and that is insurance that is designed to protect you from a claim by others being brought against you, saying that you were negligent or otherwise did something wrong. The type of insurance that comes to bat for us then is called liability insurance. And that's the focus of where we are. So if you don't mind, I'll just keep talking about that a minute, because I think I can wrap this up and put it in a package.
Okay.
The thing about liability insurance, whether it's your car insurance or your medical malpractice insurance or your commercial general liability policy, is that these carriers, the insurance companies, when there is a claim presented against you under the terms of the policy, it is your obligation to report the claim and then give it over to them. They take absolute control over your financial security. You are prohibited from involving yourself in negotiation. You are prohibited from having conversations to try to maybe explain to the other side why you're not at fault or not as at fault as they think they are. You can't do any of that under the terms of your contract. If you do, you violate the contract and you lose coverage. Every liability policy will have a section that says essentially, we, meaning the insurance company, we will settle or defend as we see fit. You know, boy, they're saying you did X, Y, and Z wrong. And particularly in med mal, nothing's ever clear. It's never certain. Rarely do people just violate something. It's always a matter of judgment. And so whenever this accusation is made against us, we immediately get our back stiffened up and we say, did not do that, didn't cause the damages. The woman was already sick, whatever. The claim's an idiotic claim. This is frivolous litigation. That's our immediate reaction. And so they say, well, so you want us to defend or you want us to settle? And you say, well, we'll defend you if you want us to. And of course you're like, yeah, hell yeah, I want you to defend me. Sometimes that's a terrible decision to make. Let me take this another step further. Imagine a case. Now, for simplicity, I'm going to talk about an auto accident case because they're easy to understand. Imagine you have a $100,000 policy on your car. Late one night, as you're crossing an intersection, you hit a kid on a bicycle and you kill him, or perhaps even do worse, right? So that he's got lifetime medical care of $3 or $4 million. There are three witnesses. Two of the witnesses say you had a red light. One of the witnesses says your light was still yellow. The witness who says yellow was a better witness. You're also saying yellow. The kid's unable to remember anything. So it's kind of a balance. And to say which way it could go, who knows? From the insurance company's perspective, they're at risk for $100,000. They may say, you know, we could win this dang thing. Why should we give up our whole $100,000 on a case that we've got? The lawyers are telling us we've got about a 40% chance that we could win the case and walk away with nothing. Why are we going to give them the whole 100? Why don't we offer them 55 or 60 or maybe $65,000? Let's play our gamble out here. From your perspective, you don't have a $100,000 limitation like they do. Your limitation is unlimited. You could end up with a $5 or $6 or $10 million verdict if this kid is injured badly enough. And so with $100,000 of coverage, your analysis is immediate. Pay the damn money. Settle the case if you can for my $100,000. And heck, if I have to kick in another 20 or 30 or 40 or 50, I'll do that too. But let's get this case settled. And so there's this immediate conflict of interest. You can apply that to every Med-Mal case because every single Med-Mal case can, to some degree, be defended. You can defend it on standard of care. You can defend it on causation. You can defend it on how much the damages actually were that resulted from the alleged malpractice. There's always gray zones around a Med-Mal case. And so the carrier, whose exposure is going to be limited to their policy limits, is going to be much more inclined to take a gamble than the insured physician would want to if the insured physician is thinking clearly about it.
I do want to interject for 1 second, because in Med-Mal, that is certainly often the case. And this is why I want everybody to understand what's in their policies and how the money gets moved around and what your personal exposure is in any single case. Because some policies do have these consent to settle clauses where the physician can't determine whether or not they're going to push for trial. And that may be offset by a hammer clause, as we've talked about in previous podcasts. And there are also scenarios where the insurer does accept that judgment over excess. And so it's really important for people to understand what boat they're in, because it naturally will influence your feelings about whether or not you want this case settled to minimize your risks of personal asset loss, right? That everybody should understand that.
There are some states in the country that have caps on non-economic damages. Most states don't have caps, though. Most states have absolutely no caps. And certainly, I don't think anybody has a cap when it comes to economic damages, such as the life care that may be required for a spinal cord or brain injured kid.
In my particular case, in Rhode Island, there's a precedent so that I signed away my consent to settle. And the insured chose to go to trial with the knowledge that if there were a verdict in excess of policy limits, they paid that thing. So that gave me a lot of confidence.
You're very lucky that you got that.
I know.
I've never heard of that happening, at least in the state of Florida, Georgia, or any other state where I practice.
So that you have to understand the climate in which you're operating. But certainly, if you are the person that's going to be on the hook for either a settlement in excess of policy limits or a verdict against you in excess of policy limits, then you really better sit up and start paying attention.
That is called a blue sky letter. When the carrier says, look, we know you want to settle, we're putting you at risk. And they used to give those from time to time. I haven't seen one in decades. I think I might have actually seen one last month. They didn't tell me that that's what they did.
What's a blue sky letter?
A blue sky letter is what you were able to get from your insurance company that says we will forget the policy limit and we will be liable up to the blue sky, whatever the verdict is that comes in. Yeah, that's, I think, where that name came from.
Oh, interesting.
So let me go further on this idea, this conflict of interest. It is because the carrier has complete control over the defense and because of this built-in conflict, the laws in many states, and Florida being one of the first, have created a duty of good faith to the carrier. They're saying, look, we know your policy says you can settle or defend whatever you want to do, but we're going to imply into this contract a duty that you have to exercise that power in good faith to your insured. And in Florida, the way it has historically been expressed until recent changes was that an insurance company has a duty to settle a claim if, under all the circumstances, it can, it could do so, and it should, meaning that the facts of the case, as best they're able to be learned, indicate that the exposure to the insured is greater than the policy limits. They're given an opportunity to settle the case, and they could and should have done so had they acted fairly and honestly and with due regard for the interests of their insured. That is the requirement of good faith. If they violate that standard, if they fail to settle when they could have and should have, had they acted fairly and honestly and with due regard, then they have to pay the whole verdict, no matter what. It takes a separate lawsuit. So typically my clients, for example, have gone to trial. Their insurance company told them that they had a pretty good case and that there was a good chance that they were going to win the case. And at some point, right before the trial, the insurance company realizes they can't bluff it anymore and they offer the policy limits. But by now, the plaintiff's lawyer says, no, I'm not taking it. Sorry. And the opportunity to settle is gone. So when that happens, the verdict goes in and the verdict comes back, sometimes 5, 10. Got one now where it's $72 million against a facility.
I just want to step outside the interview before every listener freaks out to remind you about the episode we have with Dusty Otwell on nuclear verdicts, and to remind you that the doctor at trial wins the grand majority of the time. But once in a while, we hear these kinds of numbers, which is why, as Dusty said in that episode, every defendant needs to have a financial risk assessment talk with their attorney. What is my exposure? What is the worst case scenario for me? Who is going to handle the excess judgment? What happens if we lose? Ask the questions. You deserve the answers. Okay, back to the interview.
That's when we come in, sue the insurance company for failing to settle when they could have and should have. It's a separate lawsuit. As often as not, it ends up in federal court. It's 2 years that in the best case, the doctor has to live with a judgment against him.
I tried to hammer home the point that the policy is a contract. It's a contract between you as the insured and the company. Now, most doctors will have never seen their insurance policy. They have no idea what's in it. They don't understand the words. They never had anyone interpret it. I'm telling them that you really ought to change that. You ought to understand when you're entering into a contract, you should understand what you are expected to do and what the other party is expected to do so that everybody can act in good faith according to the terms of their contract. And you should really understand what the insurance company is saying to you. What I also understand now, because I work with a lot of insurance companies, is not every insurance policy is the same, and not every insurance company is the same. And of course, I work with a very self-selecting group of people, of insurance companies, because of the nature of the work that I do. So the nature of the work that I do is that I am here to support and educate doctors. And so the insurance companies that hire me for their insureds clearly have a very different feeling about supporting their doctors than other companies might. And policies vary. Policies vary. The culture of what an insurance company does in terms of fighting a claim, defending a claim, like it is pretty amazing how much variation there is in terms of how well companies treat their physicians and their other insureds. So when I go back to saying, like, okay, this is a contract, on the defendant side, you have an obligation to report things, to not commit crimes, to not change the record, to not lie about what you did. You've got to prepare adequately for your defense. You can't not answer the phone. You can't not show up for your things. Like, you've got a job to do. They also have a job to do in order to be operating in good faith. And I think what that means will vary from state to state. What I don't understand is, so in medicine, what we want the public to know is that you can't conflate a bad medical outcome with malpractice. They're not the same thing. It's entirely possible to have something happen in medicine that you didn't want to happen, and yet the doctor was operating in good faith and in doing all the things that the doctor ought to have done. So it wasn't truly negligence. In these scenarios, let's say the insurance company wants to defend the care. The doctor wants their care defended. They go to trial and there is a completely unexpected, aberrant verdict. Is that bad faith? Like, does that, like, how do we do this? How do we decide what's bad faith?
Insurance companies don't have to settle every case, even if the doctor asks them to. What you have to evaluate is kind of a formula, is the way we express it. You have to evaluate as best you can figure out what your fair likelihood of losing the case is. Because the first question the jury is asked is, was there negligence that caused damage, yes or no? That's binary. So you have to put a percentage on that. And if you say, well, we've got 50-50 chance, we could walk. Okay, what is the expected range of damages if we lose? And for that, you know, insurance companies are given huge amounts of leeway to evaluate. For example, in Florida, where I work, an insurance company doesn't have to do anything for the first 270 days after a lawsuit is filed. They get a 90-day pre-suit notice, and we have to attach affidavits from similar healthcare providers, show what the causation is. They get to do complete discovery of medical records. They get to take client statements. They get to do all that. The insurance company has 90 days before a lawsuit can be filed. Then after that's done, they have another 270 days, and the plaintiff can be sitting out here saying, I want to settle. I'm begging you to settle. You have $1 million policy limit. I have a $12 million case. Please settle with me. And the insurance company is permitted to ignore that. And if at the end of 250 days, the plaintiff says, then just forget it. I'll just get a judgment against your doctor. That insurance company has absolute immunity for its conduct towards its insured. And that's a special law in Florida, and that's just how we have it. Nobody should assume that insurance companies automatically have to pay any verdict that comes down if they had a chance to settle. Even after the 270 days, if they've got a very strong case, they think the evidence is with them. But here's the thing. When you have a verdict that comes back and you lose a case, we've all been there. Immediately, you think, man, what a bunch of idiots this jury is. How could they possibly have goofed this up? But almost invariably, 6 months, 7 months, 8 months later, with a little distance on it, you can see how the jury got to their decision. The system actually very rarely produces these runaway verdicts that people hear about, is what I would tell you. So while we can't have a crystal ball to say exactly what the verdict's going to be, a good insurance adjuster with a lot of experience who approaches their job impartially can usually come up with a pretty accurate assessment about what the likelihood is going to be. And they are rarely wrong.
Walk me through a case in which an insurer clearly acted in bad faith. I'm going to ask after this, you know, if it's possible to have a bad faith claim when someone settled, when you didn't want them to.
No, I can answer that. The answer is no. There's no such thing as a bad faith settlement.
Okay. Well, that's a good thing to know, right? Because that's what a lot of doctors are upset about that. They don't want the insurance company to settle. They want to defend their care. They want to go to trial. They want to fight it.
That was attempted in Gainesville, Florida one time, and 20 years ago, at least in Florida, that is not a case. But a typical case, let me give you a real life example, okay? A fellow had spine surgery and he contended that his doctor didn't tell him that if he had certain symptoms, it was the emergent, he should report to the emergency room. You know, if he had bowel and bladder symptoms, he had a disc injury and that nobody told him that he said, and the doctor didn't remember telling him, but thought he must have. And so it's a typical case. The doctor has a $250,000 policy. The plaintiff is offering over and over and over again to settle the sequelae of the injury, the fact that the surgery wasn't performed timely, as he has a limp and he has difficulties with his sex life, is the claim. Well, for 2 years, the plaintiff's lawyer is begging to settle for $250,000, and with no new information, the adjuster, who is authorized to give the $250,000 by the carrier, just plays with him. They're like, oh, we know they'll take $250,000. Maybe they'll take $180,000. Nope. Okay, still at $250,000. Okay, how about let's try $195,000? And just plays this game until they get 2 weeks before trial, and then the adjuster is like, well, I guess I give up. Go ahead and give him the $250,000. And then when she doesn't hear back from the defense lawyer, like Friday before Monday's trial, she goes, hey, I never heard back. Are we settled? Are we really still on? And he says, oh, no, they declined the $250,000. I'm sorry. They've decided to go to trial. And the adjuster's response in an email was classic. She goes, oh, welp. Okay. I'll see you Monday. And the verdict comes in at $6 million. Now, that's a classic situation of insurance bad faith. But Gita, if I could, let me get a little further than this. These days, the doctors that I worry about the most are the ones that are working for these large national organizations that provide typically hospitalist services to hospitals. And, you know, physicians is one of the ones that I might think of right away on that. These physicians think they're working for, but they're not. They're working for tiny little subsidiaries that are designed to be cut off and dropped if bad things happen. If a judgment's entered, they have no assets, they have no staff other than the physicians, and they're like a lizard's tail that can be cut off and the lizard grows a new one right after it. That's one I know a lot about because I'm deep into their stuff right now. They have maybe 90 separate subsidiaries around the country, none of which have any assets. And the physicians all signed like a contract with Physicians of Florida, Roman II. But that's not physicians. That's a fictitious trade name registered by a separate little entity named Jacksonville that is intended to be bankrupted if they ever get hit.
You mean if they ever get hit with a large liability?
And it says in there, in his contract, we'll provide insurance for you in an amount that we determine to be necessary. And the doctor thinks, great, I don't have to worry about malpractice. That's going to be awesome. Well, in point of fact, they'll buy a $1 million policy for the doctor. But here's the crazy thing. Has the power of veto over settlements. So in a case I'm presently working, the physician is begging to settle. He recognizes this a girl that's got a essentially chronic vegetative state condition as a result of some mismanagement by somebody of her sodium levels. Or maybe she had a pre-existing condition too that could have contributed to it, you know, one of these fuzzy areas as always. But he recognizes that she has millions and millions and millions of dollars of claim, and he is asking to settle the whole time. The plaintiff's lawyer during the trial says, we will let that doctor out for his $1 million. He says, thank you, heavens. But says, no, we do not authorize this settlement. We want to use him as a human shield, basically to force the jury to feel sorry for this poor guy. And maybe it'll keep our verdict down if we have him in the courtroom with us. And so he ends up with a multi-million-dollar judgment against him. Uh-huh. And the company he later learns he worked for files bankruptcy. And they have no assets, and he has no protection, and he is all on his own, and he has a multi-million-dollar judgment against him as a result of that.
Now he's your client?
He is, and we're having a hard time because the people who are at fault, you can't really blame his, you can blame his insurance company, but not really. They wanted to settle. They tried to settle. It was the exercise of the veto clause. Veto clause are damnable. Doctors think they're getting a right with a veto clause. You're not. That veto clause is worthless to you because now what you're doing is you're transferring the responsibility for the settlement decision from the insurance company who's been exercising it all along. Like, they don't have to settle because you say to. It's not a, I want you to settle and you have to. It's just a veto.
I use the example of with doctors, I try to tell them, like, your patient comes in and says, like, I want this treatment, I need zinc infusions and hair analyses. And you're like, no, you don't. And when we come in, like, we aren't allowed to say, like, I want this, I want that, I want this. That's not bad faith. That's not malpractice. They get to use their judgment and their experience.
They get to use their discretion, but they should take responsibility for their decision. If a patient comes in and says, I think I have a brain tumor, I'd like to get a CT scan, and the doctor says, oh, that's silly, we're not going to do it.
Well, sure.
And it turns out the patient had a brain tumor and needed a CT scan, the doctor should be responsible for it. And the same is true with insurance companies.
You should pay attention when people are asking you something. That is true. And then you should use your best judgment. But this is a whole different animal that I wasn't expecting to get into.
I'm talking about long before a lawsuit ever happens, what doctors need to be thinking about. And they need to be thinking about, number one, there's several warning signs to watch out for. Always be careful when somebody else is buying your insurance. Number two, never allow anyone else to have a veto right over your insurance policy.
You mean the company that you're working for?
Anybody.
Like, you can have that veto thing, but you don't want someone else to have the veto thing.
Number three, if you think you're working for a big, safe company, make sure who you're working for. In your contract, if you're signing it with Acme Medical Providers, if you don't see the words Incorporated, Corporation, Inc., or LLC, if you don't see those after it, if it's just like Acme Medical Services, that's a fictitious trade name and is not necessarily the name of the legal entity that you're signing an agreement with. And the only way to know who owns that fictitious entity is to go to the Secretary of State's office in your state and look it up. The other way is when you get a paycheck, see who's giving you the W-2. If your W-2 is not matching the company that you think you're working for, don't take any answer other than you're being scammed. You got to reevaluate your situation when you're getting a paycheck or a W-2 form and it doesn't precisely match what your contract says.
And the reason for that, the reason that it's set up like that is to be able to cut loose, declare bankruptcy, and transfer the liability to the physician?
Everybody has taken a page out of the nursing homes books. The National Nursing Homes figured this out decades ago. And so all these big, super rich entities that own nursing homes were getting hit with verdicts left and right. And so they started just like stopping it. They would buy $500,000 policy with an all claims annual aggregate of $500,000, which of course gets immediately spent in January. And now they have no insurance. They're taking all the profits that they should be using to buy insurance, putting it into their pocket someplace offshore. And then that company, you know, they have a shell game of companies. They have one that owns the building, and that's an asset, so they don't provide any services. They have another one that is a billing company, and that's providing services, but they don't have any liability. And then they have another one that is actually providing patient care. That company has no assets, has no money in the bank. It has no administrative employees. It has only clinical employees. Clinical employees are the risk when you set up your business. Mm-hmm. And so the clinical employees all work for a company that is the lizard's tail, that is designed to be snipped off, and we'll grow another one and we'll hire a bunch of more people to come back in. But the judgment—
But specifically designed so that they can transfer the liability to those clinical employees. Ouch.
There's nothing morally wrong with that.
Yes, there is.
There's nothing legally wrong with it.
But there's nothing morally wrong with that.
From the patient's perspective, they think they're going to this big national safe, secure company and putting their mom and dad there. And that's what we think when we go to these physicians, right? We think we have some big thing. Look.
Yeah.
We're getting off topic.
We are, but now I want to talk about this.
There's a huge thing going on here in Tampa, Florida, where one of our most respected hospitals is licensing their name to other completely unrelated entities. I could go start up Dale Swope's Medical Services Urgent Care Center, open up an urgent care center, get me a medical provider, and then go buy a license from this hospital to use their name. So everybody who comes to my urgent care center thinks that they're going to a place being run by this well-respected hospital. But they, in fact, are going to Dale Swope's goofy little medical place, who I don't know what I'm doing, right? And so this is a business model that is becoming more and more and more prevalent as there's this consolidation within the medical industry and larger companies are kind of delivering our medical services.
Yeah.
The doctors, the individual physicians, my heart goes out to you guys. Doctors are so highly trained. They're driven by the purest of motives. I have never met an evil doctor. I can honestly say that. I have met evil lawyers. I've met evil bankers. I have never yet met an evil doctor. And they're being treated like a service provider, essentially equivalent to the photocopy repairman and profit-making centers. These systems that are designed, these business entity systems, are designed to basically be able to cut doctors loose and let you go bankrupt.
Yikes. Well, I mean, it is, except more and more and more people are working for organizations like this. And so I think that's really good advice that I didn't know. So I will add the corollary to know your policy is to know who you're working for and how likely they are to be able to handle the liability that they're saying they're going to cover.
There are some insurance companies. I'm going to name one, CNA. CNA is a great company. And there are insurance companies like that who will always stand behind their decisions, stand behind their physicians. If you can be insured by one of these names you've heard of for your whole life, that's a grab it and never disappoint them, never let them down. But whenever you're working for a company and they're insuring you with a company that you've never heard of, don't be shocked when you later learn that the megacorp that you're working for owns the insurance company, or more accurately, that there's common ownership between the two. And so there's common ownership going to some larger entity that will own everything. But there is this non-arms-linked relationship between the liability carrier and the corporation who has set up a subsidiary.
All right. This is getting very murky.
I think what you do, because that's the reality. Doctors can't start their own practices anymore. You know, the idea that some guy's going to get out of medical school and hang out a shingle and start doing call at the hospital and build up a practice, that's not realistic, because you can't negotiate a good contract with the health insurance carriers. It's just not realistic much. And so I think what you just have to do is you have to, at the very outset, evaluate your contract, fully understand it. Don't trust anybody. Maybe the people you're working with are wonderful and they're not trying to scam you, but some are.
Yeah. I mean, I think more and more the message I'm getting out of this is that you should probably hire an outside lawyer to look at your policy, to look at your contract, to explain to you who you're working for, who knows how to do the due diligence to make sure that you understand, like, these are the people that you're working for. It is not, you know, this is a lizard's tail thing. If the lawyers know that, hopefully they do.
Isn't it a crazy thing that says you can't even get a job without hiring a lawyer?
That's what it's become, I think. And my real interest in this is because I came into this whole legal world knowing nothing. And it's just like one of these situations where, just sort of like in medicine, the more you start to learn, the more you start to realize how much you don't know. So here we are.
You know, if you want some general rules, if you are in a lawsuit situation, swallow your ego, let it go, give control over that decision back to the insurance company.
Yeah.
You say to them, in every case, whenever they're saying, what do you want to do? You say to them, I want to trust your expertise. I want to be in your good hands.
Mm-hmm.
You promised me that you'd be my good neighbor. You told me I'd have a piece of the rock. You told me that, you know, I would be in good hands with Allstate. So I want you to make that decision.
You make the decision.
And I'll follow your lead.
I think that's very wise advice. All right, just bring it back to this concept of bad faith. It really does often come around to whether or not. Now, there are times when egregiously the insurer just like didn't do their job. They're not paying for the defense. They're not paying. Like, there's just weird stuff that happens sometimes.
Your lawyer says, we need to hire some more experts to cover these fields, or our experts got a little weakness and we need to spend some more money. And the insurance company says, let's just keep it within budget. Sorry, no. That rarely happens. honestly. I don't remember that happening. It's usually about the settlement. Another case we had, the defense lawyer, I will never forget his words. He writes in a letter to the adjuster after having said, I think we should settle the case, the defense lawyer writes to say, this case continues to tailspin out of control. and the insurance company just refused to do it. And I don't know what the issue was. I don't know what went on there. But when your defense lawyer is telling you that your case is tailspinning out of control, it's a bad idea to say no to the settlement opportunity.
I have one last question for you, since you also do legal malpractice and bad faith. To whom is the defense attorney beholden?
Only to the insured client. There is one client and one lawyer. The carrier situation is here. Their responsibility in this litigation scenario is that they're paying the lawyer's bills. They're monitoring it. They're making sure that they're reasonable, getting justification. But that's it. And they're being advised about the case so that they can factually make their settle or defend situation right. But that carrier is not my client. Nobody should ever mistake that the insurance company is also their client. They're not. They're a third party outside of this attorney-client relationship, which is a sacred relationship, just like physician-patient. The insurance company's job is to evaluate, to manage a litigation defense in good faith to the insured and settle when under all the circumstances they should.
Wow, this has been very illuminating. Well, I'll have to ponder all these things, my goodness.
I know that I am something of a partisan. You know, after 40-something years, it shouldn't surprise anybody that I see things from the doctor's perspective and from the policyholder's perspective. I've never really represented insurance companies, and I only see them when they're at their worst. And so maybe it's skewed me, and I don't mean to suggest that all insurance companies are bad.
Yeah, I'm sure you see the worst. And it's interesting. I think that everybody, again, everybody in this ecosystem has a role to play, and their perspectives are often very valid. You know, like there are doctors who legitimately harm people, and so that has to be reckoned with. There are plaintiff's attorneys who truly believe that they're doing the right thing by obtaining justice for that client. That's got to be reckoned with. The insurance companies do a good job sometimes of absolutely defending doctors' care, and sometimes they don't, and that's got to be reckoned with. There's no black and white answer to any of this. I think the best we'll all be is when we really have, with some degree of transparency, a really good understanding of like who does what, how do things work, how do we, you know, make reasonable decisions that are unencumbered by emotion, and just with an acceptance of like, okay, this is the system. How do we operate within it in a way that keeps us safe and able to do our jobs well?
Well, last thing I'll say is, on this idea that I don't want to settle the case, there is an emotional toll on physicians, maybe more than anyone else, whenever they're involved in a lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
They can't stop thinking about it. They mm-hmm. can't stop feeling offended and hurt and shocked that they're being blamed for providing bad care whenever, in every case, they have typically done what they thought was right at the time. If you can get that behind you, Lord knows you got enough stresses in your life.
I know. But settlement comes with consequences for us that they do not for other people, as you say, right? Settlement lands you in the data bank.
Having the claim against you comes with consequences.
I know this is all turning into the lesser of two evils. That's true. This has been so interesting and so fascinating. And I'm walking away with some very unexpected and new information that people really ought to think about. Yes, it was a little tangential, but not really when you think about it. So thank you so much for your time. And it has been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Dale Swope for his expertise and perspective as a bad faith attorney. And there are some important take-home points I want to make sure you got. First of all, your insurance policy is a contract, and you should know what's in it, both your responsibilities and your insurer's. Not all legal losses are because of bad faith, but if your insurer fails in their duty to operate in good faith and fair dealing, and you suffer a financial loss because of it, it's important for you to know what your rights are. Also, your attorney is paid by your insurance company, but their responsibility is to you and to your best interest. This is a very important point, and we didn't get into legal malpractice, but this is something that you really do need to understand. And finally, also very importantly,
we wandered into precautions that every doctor who works for a mega group should take. Know exactly who you are working for and be very, very careful if you find out that they are a so-called lizard's tail or if they have the right to veto the very good faith actions of an insurer because you could be the one left holding the bag. Very, very critical information. All right, everybody, I'll see you next month, and we will be talking about another tough topic when the government comes knocking and accuses you of wrongdoing. All right, see you then.